Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, DC and RC. For the best previews and post-fight reactions, check out ESPN's brand new DC and RC podcast, hosted by former UFC champion Daniel Cormier and UFC superfan Ryan Clark. Yes, that Ryan Clark you've seen covering the NFL after his playing days. That's DC and RC. Follow it and the right time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, relive one of the greatest icons and most successful teams in sports history, Michael Jordan and the 97-98 Chicago Bulls. Stream the Emmy and NAACP Image Award-winning series, The Last Dance, on ESPN+. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on, man?
What's up, man?
Dog, you over there with nothing on the walls, face all pursed up. You looking like you going through it.
Man, I mean, it's nothing more than the usual, but we talked about kids the last time we were on. It's ups and downs with the kids, man. It's ups and downs. And this morning, just before we about to record, it's three of them, and they just having a blow up. And none of the three of them can get along, so we had to push recording back slightly. And I came with not a great attitude to the proceedings, but I feel better already.
But I think your problem is you got two girls and a boy, right?
Yeah.
So they can't just scrap it out. Like, three boys, like, y'all settle this. Go outside and settle this amongst yourselves.
Yeah. I mean, and also, like, with just for me and my brother, like, we didn't have too many issues. We were, like, 2 years apart. So we were pretty cool. He was nice enough. He was older to like me hanging out with him and his friends. And it was simple. Like, when I wanted to be left alone, he left me alone. When he wanted to be left alone, I left him alone. It was like pretty straightforward communication. It was almost like we spoke the same language. It ain't true. And I learned the first time I had like a real relationship or something close to a real relationship was in college. There are other emotions other than happy, sad, and mad. Yeah, that was a tough one.
Like, wait a minute. So what you say? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you mad?
Yeah, some combination of them and walking away like I did with my brother. That is not always the answer when you are in a romantic relationship.
Yo, and it's probably the best answer. But it's not quite like it should work.
This probably also comes from like sports and stuff that you can't win them all. You got to try to win the championship. You can't win every single game. So you got to realize that sometimes at this moment, this game is lost. Let's go ahead and send the guys, send the starters to the sideline. Let the bums come on the field and finish this out. We're going to take an L this week. But you know what? We're going to make the playoffs, and that's what we're going to win.
Let me tell you, speaking of catching the L, I feel like as people get themselves all caught up, everybody thought that the Packers – this need to assume their Aaron Rodgers L and keep it moving because he mad at them. And they're like, yeah, let's see him walk away from this money, which, by the way, he has now walked away from this money. But, man, on Wednesday, so you and I normally do, when we do Highly Questionable together, we do it on Monday, right? You'd be leaving me out there to fan for myself on Wednesday. It's cool. I see you. But Wednesday was covered, and Charlie Kravitz, who produces the show, he'd be up in the morning like, yo, slow news day. Definitely slow news day. And you know who our favorite person at this company is when it's a slow news day? Schefter. Because Schefter is always sitting on a little bit of news. It's just a matter of when he decides that he's going to put it out. Like, I think people have a mistaken impression about guys who do that job that as soon as they find out, they coming and telling us. And that's not really it. They sit on a lot of stuff. Man, Wednesday, we didn't have nothing to talk about it. Then Schefter was like, so you know they offered Aaron Rodgers a contract extension and he turned it down, right? All of a sudden, we all can eat now. Like, Adam Schefter walked in the door with dinner. Like, we all hungry. We can't figure out what we about to eat. He walked in the door with, like, a catered meal for everybody.
Nah, it wasn't catered. It's a trough. And we run over there like pigs and just start chowing down on it and making a mess. I think, like, that would be incredibly interesting to, like, really deep dive into what it takes to be Adam Schefter or Woj or Shams, one of these guys, because how can I say this in a way that is okay? There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. And for somebody, the amount of power and amount of confidence you could have to be a newsbreaker and sit on some big news until the right moment? Because like Schefter could do that, but I guarantee you, like 20 years ago, young Schefter, whatever the equivalent of Twitter was, he was running to it as soon as he got a little tidbit.
Yeah, but you know what I think taught them to sit on it? Like, I'm not a breaking news guy, never have been, but every now and then you get you some little information. Mm-hmm. And especially when I was younger and I needed to like get out there, and being an untrained journalist, I didn't really understand the different techniques of vetting and everything else.
I
feel like you got to get burned once. Because let me tell you something, man. Ain't nothing more nerve-wracking than thinking you got it, putting it out there. And somebody be like, that's not what... Like, that's rough. Schefter gave us this with Rodgers. And I don't know when Aaron Rodgers is going to show up to training camp. Like, I really, really don't know. I kind of hope he doesn't again, because we got to have something to talk about. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel confident that these Olympics are going to make it all the way to the end.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. You and I had this discussion on opposite sides before. You believe that the Packers have more leverage than I think they do in this situation. And it all boils down to, I guess, disagreement that we have is, how will Aaron Rodgers actually feel about not playing this season?
Right.
Because, like, I think that Gutekunst loses his job if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play this season. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't play this season, Aaron Rodgers plays next season.
Right.
So I just feel like that's where the power comes from for me. And if you're arguing that his prime is waning and he can't give that year up and he doesn't want this to be the end of his career, but that's where the leverage comes from to me. It's like, it feels like a year without this money for Aaron Rodgers ain't gonna hurt him. A year without playing may not hurt him that much.
I agree with you on that. But I also think that the leverage, they got to deal with the people in their own room, right? Like the rest of the owners. And the precedent of this idea that we just going to ship you out of here because you don't want to be here no more is not something that the other 31 are trying to like have a way to go about. Like to me, if you're the Packers, if he's not going to play for you, it don't matter where he plays. If he plays with somebody else or whatever it is, right? And whatever you trade him for right now is not going to help you in the short term. If we were talking about this before the draft, I'd have been right there with you because the Packers could have got some capital that they could have used in the short run and then go from there. But now if you offer me a 2022 pick, it's 2021. We ain't even getting nothing right now. Nah, man. Like I remember with Julius Peppers around 08, 09, somewhere in there, like his last year in Carolina. And Pep just didn't want to play there anymore. Like, he had made the decision. He didn't want to do that. And another part of his decision, at least he said at the time, which is just a harrowing, frightening thought, he wanted to go somewhere where he could play outside linebacker in a 3-4, which just the idea of that dude out there, woo! Right? But that was what he wanted to do. And, you know, the Panthers franchised him, played out that year, and I think they just all came to an understanding, we're going to get through this 1 year, and then you go on about your business, and then he wound up going to Chicago.
Right.
And so with Aaron Rodgers, I really think it's just going to come down to, we can't afford to let you go right now.
Right.
Like, if you want to go, that's fine, but we're not going to be able to do this right now. Let's get through this year, see how it goes, everybody understands what it is, and then you can go on about your business.
Julius Peppers is one of those guys. I mean, anytime I hear his name, I played against him in college and obviously saw him in the league. He's one of those guys who was going to be forgotten to some degree, or at least not remembered the way that he deserves to be remembered. He was unbelievable. The man was a starter on the basketball team that won a national championship and then probably led the NCAA in sacks. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but was by far the best defensive player in all of college football for a stretch.
Duh, let me tell you this about Pep. What's funny about, like, you in Chapel Hill. Let's say you walking down the street in Chapel Hill and there's a cat in a tree and the tree is 100 feet off the ground. And the fire department comes through and they like, the tree can't get there. And I guarantee you, somebody outside would be like, I bet you Pep could get up there and get that cat. Like the concept of what is possible as it relates to Pep. And the other thing about Pep that's interesting is like when you saw Pep playing basketball at Carolina, of course, you just notice how ginormous he was, right? And if you see Pep, it also strikes you like how ginormous he is. But he's like on that Karl Malone kick where he's so giant, but he probably wear the same size waist and jeans as you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been on the same field as him. And normally, like, I'm like thinner and like I'm the guy with like a small waist and like unusually like broad shoulders. Like, I'm kind of a muscular guy, so I walk up next to guys, and the big guys are much bigger than me. They're like square. They're not like in that same triangle shape. Right. And the smaller guys normally like those are my people, and we look the same. But Pep was one of those guys that he was bigger and also like more athletic looking, and probably actually more athletic. I think that he's probably a guy that young people would enjoy watching on YouTube, because he reminds me, the comp was never made, but now that I'm thinking about it, it's like Zion if he got in shape.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he was like. On the basketball court, he wasn't as good as Zion, obviously, but that's what he looked like.
He a big slim. Like, me and Vinny were talking about this yesterday. He was talking about Giannis, and you referred to Giannis as big slim. Like, if you was coming in onto the court, and you're like, all right, slim, I got you, right? Except he big. Like, he's not really slim, but he is big. That is what, in the NFL now, that's something I don't think we talk that much about now. The big slims are all over the place now. Like, these 6'6", 265, 270-pound, like, defensive ends, or even interior line big slims. Like, remember when, I guess they still got one of them, but the 49ers had those two dudes for Oregon, Armstead and Buckner, and they both big slims.
Yeah. Yeah, Buckner's in with the Colts
Indianapolis.
Now, right? Yeah, they went and tried to replace him with a new big slim from South Carolina who ain't producing as Buckner was. But, yeah, those are special dudes. I'm trying to think. Was Peppers like the first one of them? It's not that these people don't exist. It's that no one's imagined a place for them until someone finds out that Peppers is the guy, and then everyone goes looking for Peppers. Was Peppers, I'm trying to think back. I can't remember anybody else. Like, obviously, LT was a different dude altogether. He was a different dude altogether, but he wasn't a big slim in my view.
No, I just laugh at any thought of Lawrence Taylor. Because, see, the game just isn't as violent as it used to be. Not that it is not a wildly violent game now. But, like, you go back and you look at the clips of Lawrence Taylor, and what you can't understand is left tackles at that time were really about 280, 285 pounds, right? You know what I mean? Like they were big dudes. Pass blocking rules were different, so it didn't really incentivize having these like 330 guys that it came to. And now these guys are slimming down a little bit. But Lawrence Taylor at like 6'4", 245, or 250, I am bigger, faster, and stronger than literally everyone who plays my position. And I am a maniac, right? There has not been a single player since Lawrence Taylor that you watched and were just like, oh my God, this dude is everywhere. Like, I didn't realize this. Did you know that Joe Gibbs invented the H-back? Just because it was like, we got to figure out something to do with Lawrence Taylor?
I did not know that, but I would have guessed it. Like, if you asked me, where did the H-back come about? Probably because LT was killing folk.
Like, you look at J.J. Watt, who's putting up their 20 sack seasons, a four-time defensive player of the year, and really good. But he did not change the way offense was played because you had to figure out something to do with this one dude. Lawrence Taylor's out here at every turn, just running fast and everybody, occasionally dropping back in coverage, might get a pick and take it back to the house. Yeah. And tackling people with that inimitable style where he's bringing his arm over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Right? LT is coming from behind. LT is not wrapping you up from behind and spinning you around. He's trying to break your collarbone.
There's like, I think I mentioned this on one of our pods a while ago, is like, I feel like the next frontier and like really figuring out how to build a team and pick players is fully understanding psychological makeup. Because you talked about all the things that make LT special, and the last thing you said was he's a maniac. And I kind of feel like that was a real big part of it. The older I get, the more I'm around players, and the more I get an understanding of like people, I think that we focus a lot on these other measurable skills, which is fine, and we focus on intelligence, which is important, but the mentality is something that, to me, feels like cannot be changed. You can like enhance certain things, but there are some people in certain positions that fit with certain groups, and part of that is your makeup. And I know that you can, I've been reading a lot last year, I think, about like gene editing and stuff, and like they have come to understand that they believe that like, even like down to whether you're a morning person or you're not a morning person, is like in your genetic code. So like, there's gonna come a time when doctors can like determine whatever combination of genes gives you a certain mentality. And I feel like that is going to be like the future of draft analysis. It's like,
yeah,
who got that LT gene? Let's get somebody with him, and let's also hire an extra coach who is just going to follow him around all the time.
Yeah, that's about to say. The thing is, with the LT gene also comes the cocaine gene, right? Oh, yeah. You know, and crack gene. Like, you got to figure out like how to level this.
Yeah, and the many other nonsense that LT has got involved in.
Gabe submitted Deacon Jones as an original Big Slim, and Deacon Jones, you know, for those of you who are not as well versed in football history, the thing about Deacon Jones is, first of all, who you got to be in your 20s and people call you Deacon, right? Like, I look at those clips of Deacon Jones where they show him like on the sideline chewing gum, and I'm like, dude, there's no way you're 25. This is not possible. But just the mere idea. So, Deacon Jones, what do you do to get to the quarterback? I slap him upside the head. Because he's going to close his eyes.
Talk about rule changes. Like, they had to change the rules. How so, like, slap somebody upside the head in order as a pass rush technique is not, like, an athletic skill. Presumably, everybody was slapping dudes upside the head. How hard was Deke slaps? Name another dude known for head slapping. He the only one.
No.
So how hard was his slaps that they changed the rules because of him? Not because everybody was doing it.
I think they said that he like invented the head slap. But the idea is what is going to make you close your eyes. Right. But the problem was he's concussing people. Like, I am slapping you in helmet technology. Now, you want to talk about something that's come a long way since the early days. It is the helmet technology. Oh, yeah. So you're out here basically just with like a plastic cap. And you have now been slapped in the head by Deacon Jones. And you, by the time your eyes open back up, Deacon Jones is gone. He is long past you.
I guess I could probably look this up. Just thinking about like defensive changes in NFL because of specific players. I wonder what precipitated the like pistol formation. We used to have blitzes that were designed a bunch of different ways. And at least one of the ways would be we would blitz to the back. If the quarterback's in shotgun, you blitz to the back because the back, if there's only one back in the backfield, he has to be to the left or the right of the quarterback. And that is the signifier of which way the line is sliding, which side is the zone side, which side is the man side. You might want to bring your blitz if it was designed to beat man. You would know that you would call it Ringo to bring it to the right side or Lucky to bring it to the left side. Or maybe it was just because running backs like to hit the line straight. But I wonder if the pistol, the point of that was to stop teams from doing that, because that was hell of effective, man, just being able to run them blitzes to the backside.
Yo, you just got me thinking, like, we grew up in football where there was just a whole lot of, like, crazy dudes, right? Like, you knew that that's what there were. And it ain't, I'm trying to think, like, how many dudes left where that's, like, this is what we think of you as. Like, what's his name? Like, Swearinger? He's on the list. They got Vontaze Burfict up out of there. He was a throwback in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up Burfict. That made me think of Adam Jones, Pac-Man. Yeah, like,
yeah, but he was a different kind of crazy. His was not on the field crazy, except for the fact that the man went 10 years without a fair catch. That is the one of the more amazing. Yeah. Like, that is everything you need to know about Pac-Man Jones is I don't fair catch.
My college roommate and still one of my best friends in life never fair caught a punt, and he was like he held the record, I think, at one point for most touchdowns, and like he was really good, made all conference, all American, a punt returner, but like it was a long shot to make the league. So him not fair catching was like part of the reason like it was a thing. Pac-Man was the best corner in the draft. He was like, still, I ain't gonna fair catch. Like, that is another mindset again.
That's not what I do.
There's a gene. There is a gene. There is something in there. Oh man.
Let me tell you something about fair catching. My homeboy George, one of the best friends in the world, best friend from college, right? He had a buddy he went to high school with who did not fair catch once and paid the price. And his name from then on was Fair Catch. Like, they watched that in film, and the coach couldn't even feel sorry for him. They just started calling him Fair Catch. Because, like, if you're the coach, it's hard to feel bad for him. You had a way to avoid this. Because you thought you was about to be out here being somebody.
I was trying to rush back from an injury in my second year or so in Denver. And Champ told me something that stuck with me. Advice that he never took, but like there's a difference between being tough and dumb tough. Don't be dumb tough. Not fair catching? Dumb tough. Like, cause you, what are you gaining out of that? You don't get any extra yards. You're not getting any respect from me. Like, that just makes me think you're a fool.
I wonder if video games has affected that. Cause what's the point of fair catching in video game? You're not getting hit. You know what I'm saying? Who was that I was just thinking about? Tegan just retired, right? We got all these jokes about Tegan and the going to the sideline and everything else. Tegan played 14 years and was running past people all 14 of those years. He had it right. All the dudes that we have ever picked on because they always wanted to go out of bounds, look at them dudes now. Franco Harris, still looking good. Eric Dickerson, still looking good. Like, the whole list of those dudes that were stepping out of bounds, still looking good. Ted Ginn was like, I really don't, like, what extra yard am I getting out of this? I'm not. Nope, I'm just here to be fast.
I agree now, but I was also like caught up in all that stuff where it was like, I mean, from high school when I was playing other positions, like, no, I'm never going out of bounds. I'm trying to run everybody over. And even like as a professional and college player, it's like tackling. I remember it was before they changed the rules, but like if somebody tipped the ball and didn't catch it, you could still light them up. So I'm out there at cornerback trying to do that. And I remember, was it T.A. McClendon? I think it was. A wide back from NC State. Yes. They threw him a swing in cover two, and we both could see that the ball was out of reach, but I had an opportunity to hit a man, so I lit off into him and hurt myself more than it hurt him. And I still ain't learned my lesson. Still continued going on and trying to knock people out that I had no business knocking out in unnecessary situations.
Man, you gave me a North Carolina flashback there, because T.A., T.A.'s high school legend in North Carolina. And then he went to NC State, and they get so excited about getting anything there. Like, he was they dude, right? Like, that was that. I thought about T.A. McClendon in a good 10 years, and I'm just imagining somebody trying to hit him and just bouncing off. It happens.
I was that guy. I think I stayed on my feet, but I, like, stumbled backwards. I remember it quite clearly. I couldn't breathe for a hot second. Poor NC State. Like, I never thought about this. They're the middle child down there. I mean, nobody, yeah, like, it's... you want to be UNC, you want to be Duke. Who's like, yo, let me be a Wolfpack?
Yeah, and, like, there's a whole mentality that comes around it. And they got the worst luck in the world. Like, something's going to go wrong. Like, them in the College World Series this year, they wound up losing because of COVID. Like, it looked like they had a chance to win it all, and then they got the COVID situation. They are, as far as, like, fan bases having a clear mentality, that is NC State. They 100% that. It is, and nothing ever goes the way it is supposed to, except for 1983 and 1974 in basketball.
Oh yeah, that's right. They had that Jimmy V championship, right? That was.
Yeah, the Jimmy V championship and the David Thompson championship. Like, stars have to align really perfectly in a lot of ways for them to get the things that they actually want to have.
It probably doesn't even feel that great. Because, like, I feel like if you imagine a state school and a state that's not hugely populated, winning one or two championships, that lasts a while. But what if you 10 miles away from Duke and UNC? Like, how's that feel?
Well, hold on. Here's what you got to remember. When they won their championship in 83, Carolina won the championship in 82. But at that point, they both had two titles and Duke had none. Right. So, like, they had legitimate reason to view themselves as on par with everybody else. And then they went on probation in basketball at the absolute worst time, which is at the point of the explosion of cable television. And so while Duke and Carolina are being beamed into every home and that rivalry game is becoming the rivalry game, they stunk for like 10 years and just can't quite get it back. And Lord knows they try, man. Lord knows they try. Like, they get a bad rap. They're past the point of, like, expecting to be as good as UNC or expecting to be good as Duke. But they hate UNC so much, I can't begin to explain, like, what it is to have a rivalry where one side hates the other in the way that NC State hates North Carolina.
There was no way you could have come into this podcast knowing that we're going to talk about NC State history. But, like, that is a full explanation of what happened to that. And I was born in 83.
Yeah, well, I lived there in this sports talk radio there. I had to learn who the people were, right? Like, I had to get an understanding. Because I was like, yo, this is weird. Like, everything about this just doesn't make any sense. And then I got in. I was like, damn, I see why y'all like this. I get it. I fully understand.
My whole life, obviously, was UNC. My dad's from Charlotte and was always a UNC fan, and my whole life was UNC Duke, like going at it in the ACC and basketball and all that. But prior to that, apparently it was UNC NC State, and then they got suspended.
It is a generational thing, that there is a generation of people for whom, like, beating State is a bigger deal than beating Duke. And now, like, the Duke thing, Carolina Duke is so all-encompassing. Like, you could have something going on in Chapel Hill and they could tell you, like, I just wanted to let you know that a breaker went out at Duke and the power's out. Everybody's getting up, clapping. Pat Forty, my good buddy Pat Forty, who works at SI now, 40 was at the NCAA tournament in 05. And I think it was the Sweet 16 round. I think Carolina playing, that must have been they were playing Wisconsin that game. They were playing Wisconsin or Villanova, either one. And 40 said he was standing behind a cheerleading coach with Carolina. Duke lost that year to Michigan State. And I think Duke was losing at the time. And the cheerleading coach, matter-of-factly, said, I root for Iraq if they were playing Duke. It is nonstop. Oh, they mean it. All the time, I would root for Iraq before I rooted for Duke. And I understand what she means. I feel her on that because I'm the same way. I might not, like, I ain't got no super duper beef with Iraq at this point. So, yeah, like, yeah, I understood exactly where that woman was coming from. Because we talked about this before, man. It was a different generation to dealing with Duke. You youngsters don't understand how much fun it was just to hate Duke.
I wonder if you know anything about the... I mean, I guess they had a 30 for 30 for Alabama versus Auburn. But when I went down to get my knee done by James Andrews, I went into his office and his the receptionist, she introduced herself and gave me the stuff to fill out and then told me that she was in a mixed marriage. And I was like, that's okay. Like, is she trying to let me know that she down with the Brown? Like, I mean, you're married or I'm married. We're good. And we're fine. But I appreciate you letting me know. Because, like, I'm coming down to Birmingham, Alabama. So I'm expecting the Birmingham that we see on them black and whites. But so that's what I'm in my mind. I was like, she just let me know that we safe here. And so then later on, I mentioned it to Andrews. He's like, oh, no, she talking about her husband went to Auburn and she went to Alabama. I was like, what? I fully expected, like, them to be talking about something deeper. So then I'm down there for, like, a week or whatever, a couple weeks recovering and stuff. And, like, I saw it. It's the same thing where it's, like, it's real hate. I don't know why, but the hate is real. Like, they are happy when bad things happen to people who are affiliated with Auburn.
Yes, yes. So... Auburn, Alabama, there are a lot of rivalries that are like Auburn, Alabama, but obviously not as intense as Auburn, Alabama. What people, I think, struggle with is understanding that in the South, there's the aristocracy and they're the people that work with their hands. You know what I mean? And so, like, Auburn is the tech school. It would now be an engineering school, but would have been an ag school back in the day. And Alabama is where the upper crust, you know, that's where they send their kids. What makes Duke UNC different is that at UNC, it's something like 80-some percent of the students are from North Carolina. And at Duke, 80% of the students are not from North Carolina. So, like, it is a Civil War type of situation. And so, but they're very similar people underneath it all, right? They just do it and they come from different places. You know, they close. Like, there's a lot of cooperation. There's a bus that runs from Duke to UNC twice an hour. You know, you can take classes between the two type stuff. Like, you know, you got all of that stuff. Ain't no real cooperation between NC State and UNC, at least as far as I can tell. And honestly, Duke and NC State, they just close to each other.
Duke and UNC are both state schools. It's amazing to me. Well, I'm sure that there's some cooparation. There has to be.
Well, state, yeah, no, Duke is private.
Yeah,
state
and UNC. I thought that's what I said. That's what I meant. They're both state schools. The idea that UNC would have some collaboration with Duke where people are taking classes at both places is such a slap in the face. Like, you want to take a bus?
Yes, that's it. See, that. See, you got. You see, that's it. You got to the bottom of it. You got to the bottom of a big deal of it. Like, there is, like, an underlying respect between Duke and UNC. Like, it's there. There's no respect heading over there for state. And for reasons I fully understand, they hate it.
They must have gave Phillip Rivers a boatload of cash. Like, why in the world would he sign up for that? Like, I'm trying to think of major recruits that they got down there at NC State. Phillip Rivers comes to mind as the big one.
Well, hold up, though. Let's think about this, right? They got Phillip Rivers. They had Mario Williams. I mean, they had three first-round picks on the defensive line that year. Russell Wilson was obviously not a big recruit, but, you know, but they had him. I mean, like, it's kind of turned in briefly into, like, an NFL football factory type of situation. Like, here's what I feel like happens to NC State often, and this happens to a lot of schools, so I'm not singling them out. But, like, my alma mater, we obviously a Division II school, Clark Atlanta University, so, you know. But if you look at the media guide for the football team and you see a guy with Division I size on there, you know he stinks.
Exactly.
Because why would he be here otherwise?
He either stinks or he has some trouble with the law.
Yes, yes, Yeah, it's like those schools, because I learned how to watch college football differently when I was there, because I had to understand what it was for people to love an 8-win team. And of course, now the team I root for, or used to root for, I'm still working that part out, became a 7-win team. So like you learn to appreciate things just a little bit different. But it's like, what is it like to love an 8-win team? But they would always invariably get some guy that had like unreal height, weight numbers. And you're just like, okay, he must stink. Like, especially if he's not from here. If he's from out of town and he putting up those numbers, oh, he's got to stink. Because otherwise, why are you here?
I absolutely don't get it. I don't know. I had an offer from NC State. I remember going down there to visit, and that was the end of it. I was like, yeah, I'm good. Like, it was just...
I tell you this, though. Really? You would have had a ball.
Maybe I just got a bad visit. I was like, yeah, I'm good.
Oh, man. No. Like, once you was actually on the team, man, you'd have been a star. Like, that's one thing about it. They care a lot about their athletes down there. You definitely... And like, oh, yeah, you would have been down there... around the same time, but you know, with Mario and some of them dudes, they needed you. Somehow they had three first round picks on the defensive line with the third best defense in the conference. That's the life of going to NC State. Like, that's just in every state, everybody got somebody. Like Texas A&M and NC State to me are very much so the same place. Like they dealing with a very similar set of circumstances in all of this. And it was just fun for me to watch as an uninvested party. I'm like, wow, these people really care about this 8-win football. Ain't that something?
Sorry to shift gears, but I was reading about doping in the Olympics. And I'd never given it any thought. It was an article in The Economist that just pretty much was like laid it out and was like, it's pervasive. Most of the World Anti-Doping WADA doesn't have the staff to test. So they rely on the national federations or national anti-doping agencies to do the tests. And I never thought much about that before. So I went back and looked at the Sha'Carri Richardson story and was like, damn if it ain't say that USADA was the ones who she tested positive for. I just assumed that since it was collected to the Olympics, that it's the World Anti-Doping Agency. And they were just saying how, like, most of the, like, WADA doesn't have an incentive necessarily to catch people because they're funded by all of these countries and also funded by the Olympics. And obviously, the Olympics wants the perception of fairness, but they like records being broken because that makes people care. And then all the national federations, they want to succeed and they want to do well at these sorts of things. So, like, they don't have the incentive. So they were making that point. And they cited a poll that was done in 2011 at the World Championships. It was like an anonymous poll for 1,200 athletes. 44% of them anonymously admitted to doping, which, like, who knows how high the number actually is if 44% was willing to admit. Somebody tell me it's anonymous. I don't care. I don't gain nothing by telling you the truth. I'm saying, nope, never doped. But 44% said they did. So anyway, it was on my mind, and I figured we was running out of time. I wanted to get it in.
Did you watch the 30 for 30 on Ben Johnson and Carl Lewis? I can't remember the name of it. It is absolutely fascinating if you have not seen it, because one thing that happened was in advance of the 1984 Olympics, it was a big thing, and they're like, hey, man, we got to make sure that nobody tests positive, right? So what they did was have everybody come in and before the games or before the trials or something and take tests. And then once they took the test, it wasn't like to go tell them, okay, don't use this stuff anymore. It was to then allow them to understand what to look for to make sure that the test when the Olympics came around wasn't really the test. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that was what they did. It's like, it was really, really, really interesting where they basically just pulled Carl Lewis's card and were like, yeah, he on it. He on it.
All the money that they put, that shoe companies and everyone, these powerful places put behind certain athletes, like, nobody wants them to get caught. And it's not necessarily to be critical of any individual, because it's probably similar to the Barry Bonds situation in that, like, maybe a good portion of these people are on it. So maybe they would still be the greatest if everybody was off of it. But it led me down a bit of a rabbit hole. And then I started reading about the Vaporflies, these Nike running shoes that are apparently considered tech doping, like technology doping, because they are like 4% more efficient than any other shoe. So like all the runners are using them, and some people think they shouldn't be allowed. But anyway, it's just a whole rabbit hole that took over my morning unnecessarily. So I'm gonna burden you with it also.
Nah, man, that doping game, like, look, man, stakes is high. You know what I'm saying? Like that's all that really comes down to is, hey, bro, I don't know how to tell y'all, but stakes is high.
Never used any PEDs and like throughout my career, I was like, I assumed somebody was using it, but I assumed there was a small portion and like part of me was like a little judgmental of them. But I tell you what, That year, I've talked to you about that year that I spent in Atlanta where I thought that like my career was gonna be over if I didn't have a great season. Bruh, I don't know if somebody would have slid so like I didn't have the right relationships or like people thought I was a goody two shoes and nobody offered it to me. Somebody slid something by me right at that moment that I was at my weakest. I don't know. I like to think that I still would have been like, nah, but man.
Nah, people got to be honest with themselves about what the game is and what the stakes are and all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing when you just like, oh, okay, I just want to do this so I can be better than everybody else. But like, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to stay in the game. I totally 100% see how it is that people, you know, wind up in the place, especially for recovery. Because, you know, rehab, just such an agonizing. I had a rehab from a knee surgery when I was 15 that they told me was minor, right? And I guess in the grand spectrum of surgeries, it certainly was. But dog, no, that was whack. That was awful. I wish somebody would have come off of me some HGH.
Exactly. Yeah. Now my rehab was terrible too. Nobody really cares if football players are doing it, and I don't want to draw too much focus to anybody, any person in particular, or any other sports. But like that basketball schedule is long. I mean,
Yo.
I don't know. Maybe we should move on to another topic.
Nah, the thing with basketball, nobody's thinking to look at them. You know what I'm saying? They just kind of like, yeah, they're not doing that. And I tell you, this has happened. You talk to some people like around the league and you start having a conversation about that, and it won't be long before they basically like, yo, black folks scared of needles. Like basically, because the thing is, like, culturally, like steroids as a culture is a very white thing, right? Like, it's the idea of we can't really compete with these dudes, so we got to come up to the next level. Like, the dude in the parking lot at the Gold's Gym and all that stuff like that, that is, like, the vision that people have of that is white.
Please. I mean, black folks who are in sports are not afraid of needles. I promise you that. I mean, most of them aren't, at least. Like, they've had plenty of them for plenty of different things. They've had to get over it. But the crazy thing was, my guy who I was talking about took, like, the PEDs, and he would say, like, it would make him feel better. But the craziest thing about it, from his perspective, was, like, he said that it made the game like feel easier mentally too. Like he, and I guess maybe there's some science behind like not having to expend as much mental energy somewhere else, but he was saying that's what he felt like made him better. And like the drugs weren't meant to impact him psychologically or mentally, but whatever reason, he said he felt like he was in more control, the game was slower and all that, which like I mentioned, had somebody come to me that year when I was in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I like to say I would reject it. But bruh, I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Dr. Dre, you see that? I was on Twitter this morning. Everybody was upset because Dr. Dre had to pay his ex-wife $3 million a year for the rest of her life in spousal support. And that's what I thought. I was like,
that's
they
nothing.
Were like, Dr. Dre gonna choke his lawyer. People on Twitter, I was like, what? Dr. Dre's worth a billy. If he got to pay her $3 million a year for the next 50 years, that's only 150. He good.
He going to take his lawyer to Nobu. Like, they about to have a party to celebrate this one. You going to look at all that money she was asking for in the intervening time period. It sounded like she was asking for like $3 million a month.
Maybe people have figured it out by now, but I was shocked by that this morning. People was like, he mad. Like, 150? Nah.
Nah, let me tell you something, and I ain't trying to judge y'all for this, but you can tell just how broke somebody is by how they react to like these divorce settlements and the way they play out. And look, I understand a big part of it is you don't want to lose, like you don't want to come off the money or whatever it is. But I really do look at that stuff and be like, man, if I had $1 billion and I just want you out this house and I want this to be over with, you got it. You just gonna have to get over the fact that like your money gonna pay for a car to some other dude gonna drive.
It'll be okay.
Like you just gonna need to like, you remember what like Hulk Hogan on the list of ridiculous Hulk Hogan moments. But Hulk Hogan said he saw that young boy. Now, granted, I got this a little bit because his ex-wife was dating some young boy who was like a friend of his son's. And he riding around Clearwater, Florida and see that young boy whipping his car. And that's what made Hulk Hogan say,
that gotta hurt.
I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's right, but I understand OJ was coming from. No, 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 Hulkster.
Chris Rock could say it on stage as a part of a joke. You, sir, cannot. You need to stop.
No, 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 no. I understand where OJ's coming from. The point was never whether you could understand it. The point was you can't. Yeah. We don't joke about that, Hulkamania.
Intellectually, like if you take your emotions out of it, like the concept of spousal support is something that like I completely understand and can accept. I've never been in that situation and I don't ever plan to be there. But like decisions were made and sacrifices were made and people got accustomed to certain things, whatever. That's fine. But what has become clear to me from this settlement is that whoever started saying that it's cheaper to keep her line was lying. And just because it rhymes don't mean it's right.
Yeah, I tell you this, though. I bet you after Dr. Dre got that done, he was like, yo, cheaper to get gone. You know what I'm saying? Like this, sometimes you just kind of got it. Now, for regular people, cheaper to keep her is true. Like, that's the thing. Johnny Taylor sang that song, Cheaper to Keep Her. And if you listen to the Johnny Taylor catalog, trust me, that is not billionaire music, right? That is regular dude that's just like, look, I got to live here. You got to live here. Ain't none of us going to be good. You know, we get out. Like, you're going to do this. This is the last thing I'll say before we go. And this is my thing about Dr. Dre. Bruh, how many times you not going to have your paperwork in order? You ain't had your paperwork in order with Eazy-E. You ain't had your paperwork in order with Suge Knight. And then on this one, you didn't have your paperwork in order. How do you never have your paperwork in order? We're going to find out something about this Beats deal.
One of my wife's friends, I believe, got hit up for a spousal support. Her husband was like, or her ex-husband, she was more financially successful, was like, yeah, I got accustomed to some things. But I think the marriage was too short for him to make the come up. But that is one of those many patriarchal things in our society that, like, maybe I've never been in a situation, but I would find it very difficult to walk up in a courtroom like, give me half. That's sexist of me. But I feel like maybe it'd be different if I actually was in that situation. It's easy for me to say now.
Nah, these dudes is doing it. And let me tell you something. It is causing a lot of these ladies to rethink everything they ever thought before. Like, now that you the one cutting the check. You know, can you imagine that? Like, you deal with everything in this world. You deal with all this misogyny. You had to overcome all the odds or whatever. And now this dude is getting a cut of your check because he got a lifestyle that he has grown accustomed to. These dudes out here, like, losing their jobs and never leaving the house because she out here getting money, man. This role reversal hit a lot of women. Like, because in the end, a lot of the things that we think of as chivalrous are really patriarchy. It's basically ownership of that woman. And now you find it out. Oh, you the one with the money, eh? Guess what? It's y'all's money. It ain't just your money. And they're like, what real man would do that? You the one that married him. I ain't really got no explanation to that because I see you got a point. I'm not saying I don't understand where you coming from. I'm just saying, you know, flipped up, didn't it? Flipped up. Man. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, that's Foxworth Friday with Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at undefeated.com. Mondays on Highly Questionable with your boy. You be doing Fridays on Highly Questionable without your boy. You make your own decisions about that. Kind of thing, man. Appreciate you as always.
It was great, man.
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley headed everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.